Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Today's show is a all Cavs questions answered thing that definitely skews more towards the younger Cavs players, so Kevin Porter Jr., Darius Garland, Dylan Windler in particular. One of the questions we didn't get to that I'll just address real quick is Colin Sexton coming off the bench. I think that's, not the most... I think that's potentially a long-term thing. You'll hear the Lou Williams comp for him on this pod, but I don't think that's where we're at yet with him. But today's show with Spencer Davies is all Cavs questions answered. Again, find him on Twitter at SpinDavies. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrights. That's on Instagram as well. So please check me out on those platforms. Cavs play the Heat in Miami Wednesday, 7:30. No Tristan Thompson. Kevin Love probable, Larry Nance questionable, no Zizic, no Henson, no Windler as well. And the two-way guys, Dane Wade and Tyler Cook, are with the team. So we'll kind of see what the Cavs throw out there. We'll see what Beilein throws out there. But it's probably going to be a tough one for the Cavs, but we'll see how they look in South Beach. But without further ado, here is today's show with Spencer Davies.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
This call is being recorded.
All right, Spencer, let's hop into these questions. First one comes from BBBilly781 on Twitter. He asks us, do you think Coach Beilein tries to run the offense through 1/2 players, or does he just have an offense? So I think this is sort of, if you're looking at Beilein's offensive philosophy, I do think it is about getting everyone opportunities, but I do think that when you've seen how the Cavs play this year, Kevin Love is clearly sort of the main focal point. And then I think Tristan has had a lot to do. And then I think Colin's probably the co-2 number three guy. And then you have guys like Jordan coming in and taking a lot of shots. But it is more equal opportunity when guys like Kevin, guys like Jordan, guys like Tristan, guys like Colin are not in there. And, you know, that maybe will change if Darius kind of gets more aggressive. But I do think it is, quote unquote, just an offense. But I do think Kevin and Tristan and Colin are sort of the main things kind of propping that up. What do you think?
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. And the usage kind of fluctuates, and it all kind of depends on who's in and who's not. Like, as you know, Kevin Love didn't play the game in Madison Square Garden. And then when you watch the offense, the pick and roll just wasn't working at all. And most of it's kind of ball dominant Colin Sexton, ball dominant Kevin Porter Jr., because he was the one that stepped up and filled in that starting role yesterday. It just kind of fluctuates the usage. When they were having success earlier in the season, it was going through Tristan Thompson, who was right in the middle there, doing handoffs, you know, getting Kevin Love off of the screens, any of that stuff that they ran through the big men and the guards. They were doing a better job because they were playing off ball. But as you see, when the guards have had the ball more in their hands and they're kind of initiating the offense, it hasn't gone right, just kind of because the other teams are starting to blitz the pick and rolls and really trying to double them and really confuse them and get them kind of flustered.
What did you make of how the offense looked? Monday was the Knicks game. They lose that game, obviously second night of a back-to-back, but that's the first game this year with no Kevin. What did you just make of him being taken into the offense for a full game and not just like basically half of a game like we saw on Sunday?
I think that you see the attention that he draws away from teams and how it affects the other guys in the Cavs starting five. It's like when you don't have an established veteran who, one, not only commands attention on the block, but can also command attention out on the perimeter, draw guys away from him, command double teams, and allow the others to facilitate and take advantage of that. Now you have other teams that can just basically say, okay, we're going to send two your way. And I think the real thing that the Knicks did well, obviously because they're a bigger size team, they have more wings and power forwards per se.
They have all the power forwards.
They do have plenty of power forwards. They sent two guys over at Darius every time that they tried to make a pick and roll happen, and Darius would turn it over probably more than not. With Colin Sexton, he didn't turn it over quite as much, but when they sent to his way, he would just kind of have to dribble out of it and then kind of force something at the end of the shot clock. Those types of things are what happens when you don't have a guy like Kevin Love on the floor who can space it and really open up the lanes for other players to take advantage of that. So I think that seeing that as what you would see if Kevin Love were traded later in the year, it wouldn't be pretty.
No, it would be pretty bad. Okay, next question comes from Twitter from @_everythingcavs. Chris Kaler asked a similar question, but if the trend continues of KPJ improving and Jetty struggling, is there a viable universe that KPJ takes the starting spot in the near future? I have a very distinct, strong opinion on this. I'm going to let you answer this first, though. What do you think of the idea of KPJ in the near future, not like end of the season, not next year, taking a starting spot for the Cavs and not just a one-off capacity like we saw on Monday?
If he took a starting spot, it wouldn't be the three position. He's just not big enough in that sense. Size-wise, he needs to get a little bulkier. He's still not quite as tall as most wings are. He's more of your guard type. Combo guard, I believe, is what he said in the past, is what he likes suitable as his role. So I don't think it would come at the small forward if we're talking positionally as far as replacing Jetty Osman in the starting lineup. I've always contended that eventually Jetty Osman's going to slide to the bench role where he would be better, where he would have more usage, and where he would be able to facilitate and kind of be his own man rather than playing with two guards that are in the middle of their development and then two veterans who command the basketball. He's kind of in a really awkward position there. If you put him in the bench spot, maybe he's able to kind of flourish a little bit more because there's not as much pressure. I could see that small forward position starter being Dylan Windler here later this year if he's as good as what the organization's making him out to be, what John Beilein is saying he's going to be, as an off-ball cutter, as somebody who provides extra possessions, who can space the floor, spot up, and do all that. But Kevin Porter Jr. as a three, I don't see that. But if they do elect to go that role, I could see it either being Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. with Colin Sexton off the bench in the future, or I could see it vice versa, Colin Sexton and Kevin Porter Jr. with Darius Garland coming off the bench in the future.
I'm just going to say this very bluntly. I think trying to start Kevin Porter Jr., and I think the assertion by some people that Kevin Porter Jr. is already good, and I really like Kevin Porter Jr., both as a player, and I think he's a really interesting guy to talk to. I think that's crazy. Kevin Porter Jr., just to run through some things, came into Monday night's game shooting a whopping 7.7% on catch-and-shoot threes. That was his second most common shot. Kevin Porter Jr. is currently shooting through 12 NBA games, 38.5%, 23.3% on threes. He's shooting 77% on free throws, but he just missed, I think, 4 or 5 in the other night. He's averaging 7 points, 1.4 assists, 2.4 rebounds, shooting under 50% on two-point shots. The defensive numbers are not good. I think Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be good. There are 5 things like every game that I see him do, and I'm just like, this guy is going to figure this out. The instincts are there. He makes the kind of mistakes you expect a really raw 19-year-old to make. I think rushing to start him, while I get the excitement on him about him, I think is kind of misunderstanding what he is at this point. I don't think he's like a good playmaker at this point. I don't think he's like really like, I don't know if he is like Spencer is, I don't know if it's like, I'm not trying to be like a prick here, but I don't know if he's like actually good at like actually legitimately has like a very good skill yet. He's just so young, so raw. Like there's stuff he can do well, but I don't think he has like a single skill that's like, okay, I'm going to bank on this. And like, that's going to allow him to thrive at a high level consistently. That's just not there yet because he's 19 years old. I think people need to be very cautious and slow with Porter Jr. You need to bring him along slowly, let him learn, you know, use Alphonso McKinney to kind of, maybe if he needs some time to go to the G League, just get some time like to just watch for the bench and learn that way. You have Alphonso McKinney to go in there. I think anything like they're like this outcome that we've seen so far where he's playing like 20 minutes a night, is a firm part of the rotation and all that, is like the high end of what I would want to play him at least through the All-Star break. I'm in no rush to see Kevin Porter Jr. taking on starters minutes. I just think that's like I think that's really rushing him when he's, again, still very young, still very raw, and has a long way to kind of figure some stuff out. More playing time, starting minutes are not going to like fix that for him. It's just going to take a lot of time, and you have to be patient to kind of realize a guy like this.
There's no doubt about that. And you got to realize too, in the beginning of the season, especially, after seeing the success that the Cavs had in those first 10 games and then seeing what the product's been the last three or last four, there's going to be people grasping at straws. It's just a natural reaction from anybody who's watching what's happening on the floor. With Kevin Porter Jr., we got to also remember that he's kind of been thrust in this role really quickly. That's with Dylan Windler being out. You could even, you know, draw that up to some of the guys being out, like Larry Nance Jr. and John Henson. Whoever's out is going to have to step up and get some minutes. When you're lacking bodies, especially in the department at the wing, guys are going to see time. And he's still, you know, making more minutes over Brandon Knight and, you know, Matthew Dellavedova. He's having more minutes than him, I'm pretty sure. Like, those are guys that are the veterans on the expiring contracts that could be holding his time back, but they want to see what he looks like right away, where he's at right now. I don't think that that's going to be the case the entire season. And like you said, having him get some time in Canton and kind of getting the playing time that he's desiring, like he's getting right now on the NBA level. But once that starts to diminish, I think would really be able to let him find himself, what role he wants to play, whether he wants to be that playmaker and whether he wants to be that wolf, quote unquote. And I think that that's a really good way to go about his development, because I know they want to be really careful in not trying to destroy this kid's confidence right out of the gate, and also getting him some confidence by putting him in these NBA situations as he's been in early in the season. And as far as his play style goes, I'm not going to go as far as to what you think there, I don't think. But I see kind of like he's like a Jordan Clarkson a little bit. The isolation possessions that he has are fantastic. He's somebody who's able to.
My point is that it's not like he's not good at them. It's just like he doesn't have one thing where, like, I think if you had to play him 30 minutes a night right now, like, Jordan Clarkson can, like, thrive by, like, just he can get buckets. Like, he can get off his shot no matter what. Kevin Porter Jr., I don't think has like that thing where, like, every possession on either end of the floor, he can just do something and make it work. I don't think that's like there yet. And I think that's like that's fine. He's 19 years old.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I think if you see the little stuff where he does it right, that to me is like what you're looking for. That's like the baseline level expectation for me. And he's exceeded, like, defensively, he's exceeded my expectations. Like, he does a couple things defensively every night where I'm like, holy shit, like, I didn't think he could do this. And that's really encouraging.
No, yeah, for sure. And I think that he has this aggressive mentality that, you know, a lot of guys that come into the league early, I mean, you can even look at Darius Garland, don't have. They're going out and getting it. They're not waiting for it to come to them. They're going to it. Kevin right now, I think his pure role is being that guy to rescue an offensive possession if there's a bad one. And I've seen it a number of times this year where the shot clock's gone down to like 5 or 4 and he'll hit a three, or he'll hit a contested mid-ranger, or he'll get to the line. You know, one of those things like where the oh crap, we didn't run this well, we didn't execute this well, so somebody has to get it, and it's a ticking time bomb, and he ends up getting a bucket. I've seen that multiple times with Kevin Porter Jr.
We're going to take a quick break and then come back to talk about more questions you guys have asked, get into some more interest, so stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. All right, Spencer, we are back. You got some questions as well. Give me a question here you want us to answer.
Okay, I kind of liked this one because it kind of goes into what we were just talking about Darius Garland kind of, you know, being a little shy. Net Ninja says, the number 5 pick has been awful early in the season. Garland has the third worst rookie effective field goal percentage and total shooting percentage for players averaging above 20 minutes per game. He has a bad turnover ratio and his defense has been lacking and the usage is depreciated. Is it time to bench him?
So I have a better fix. I think what you do with Garland is you continue to start him. I think because we live in this like instant gratification society, and maybe because guys like Ja are doing really dope shit, you have a kid in Garland who's really young, played a whopping 5 college basketball games, had knee surgery, is still coming back into getting into shape and just kind of knowing what to do in the basketball court, is still kind of learning the flow of the NBA. Like, it's still very early in his career. He's also playing in a situation that's like not really like I would argue encouraging him to just kind of let loose. I need to go back and watch his 11-point third quarter against the Heat in particular to kind of see what the context of that run was. But when you think about the lineups he's most playing with, it's guys like Colin Sexton, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, Jetty. Not so much Jetty, but the other guys are guys that are taking up a lot of possession. Garland, and then when he plays into bench units, it's more with Jordan Clarkson than it is with Matthew Dellavedova. What I would do is I would adjust the rotation a little bit. I would have Clarkson come in for Garland at like the 6-7 minute mark of the first quarter. Garland then comes back sometime in the second with the bench unit, so he plays with Deli, plays with Nance, plays with KPJ, and then plays with like maybe whoever else the fourth guy, fifth guy is, if it's McKinney, if it's one of Thompson or Love, whomever. You put him in that situation, there's no one there, in my opinion, that's going to like really kind of eat into his shots as much as like a Clarkson is going to be, or as much as a Sexton's going to be. It's going to kind of force him to like shoot a lot, or it's going to just kind of give him at the very least give him opportunities to do so. Deli's not going to be a guy that's going to hoist up a bunch of shots. He's going to help Darius get more looks. That is just going to be a situation where, because he won't have to defer to guys like Colin, who doesn't defer at all, or Kevin or whomever, it's just, I think that would just give him more freedom. That's a little tweak. I think it's also just, again, it's 12, 13 games into his rookie career. He didn't play a lot in college, whatever. It's going to take time with him. I think benching him is like an extreme reaction to what we've seen. Like, are the numbers good? No, but there have been some really, like, just like KBJ, there have been some really, really good moments. I think there are better fixes for a guy like that. What do you think?
I think if you bench him, that does a whole disservice to his confidence, especially for how much this organization's been pumping him up and how much his teammates have been pumping him up.
And how much John Beilein likes him and how much John Beilein is like a fan of Darius Garland. And I don't think that's like, that does not strike me as like a Beilein move.
It doesn't. Because he's not an overreactor. He's not somebody who will take such a small sample size and say that that's who it is. That's who he is. You know, he won't do that. I kind of agree with what you're talking about, but at the same time, I see Darius Garland just not taking advantage of the opportunities he does have. And again, I do realize that he plays with Colin Sexton, somebody who's aggressive by nature, a guy like Kevin Love, who is an all-star who needs his touches, Tristan Thompson, obviously the one who carried the offense through the first couple weeks. But Darius Garland, when he gets the ball in his hands, he's indecisive right now.
Agree.
He's indecisive. If you watch him in pick and roll situations, obviously he's getting blitzed. He got absolutely mauled against the Knicks. Against Philadelphia, the same thing. He turned it over a ton. So maybe run a little bit less pick and roll action with him right now. Get him out in transition, get him running. But I think overall what you need to do is tell him to just let it fly. Because anytime he gets a catch and shoot opportunity, you almost see when he's thinking. And then as soon as he takes those four or five dribbles, gets into that in-between area between that mid-ranger and between that floater. Doesn't happen very often that it goes in, and it's hard to adjust to that kind of length that you've never played before. So anytime you get yourself into trouble like that, it's bad news for the offense overall. It usually results in either a turnover or a blocked shot. So he just needs to kind of bear down and understand, let it fly. Let it fly from three. He is a tremendous catch shooter. John Beilein talks about that all the time in practice. His numbers charting, coming off screens or spotting up, whatever it has to be. And I know that he's not the spot up guy of the future. He's the point guard. He's the one that has to play make for others. And he does a great job of that. But get him going on some of these threes. And that's not entirely the Cavs' fault that he's not doing it. It's just kind of a mindset thing that he has to adjust to. And the second point I have with all of that is that Colin Sexton is the easiest scapegoat in all of this.
Yep.
And I think it's completely baseless when you watch the guy play. And it has no effect on what Garland's growth is. I don't think that just because Colin Sexton is aggressive, that means that he's affecting Darius Garland not playing to his abilities. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think the overall point of that, Douglas, my thing with that is I think sometimes with Colin, he just like, I think once he gets the, like, I think Darius is trying to play like a role of facilitator that like the offense sort of needs, because like Colin's not going to do it. And I wonder if there's just something where like Colin is just already a pretty good scorer, where like part of the plan maybe is just like, let's defer to Khan a little bit and kind of let him do stuff, and we'll bring Darius along. Jordan, I'm going to ask you a question. Based on guys that are actually in the rotation on a given night, so that's going to disqualify a couple people that are like weirdly on this list right now. Where do you think Darius Garland ranks in terms of usage amongst core like rotation Cavs pieces that have like actually played real minutes and a real number of games?
In usage on the team overall or amongst starters?
Amongst the team overall.
I'm going to go ahead and say fifth.
So this is the order, excluding John Henson, who has a 30.1 team high usage in 8 minutes. So Sexton's at one at 26.6. Clarkson is next at 26. Love is there at 23. Brandon Knight, who I'm disqualifying from this because he's played 70 minutes, is fifth. Garland is sixth, just is a 0.3 ahead of Tristan Thompson.
Okay.
So that seems about right to me.
Then he has his touches, which people need to stop looking at the numbers and watch a game.
I think the numbers like provide the context to this, and I think the Tibbenness is right. I think I just like wonder if part of what they're sort of like I wonder if like also just like our expectations for him with like and the way they talked about his shooting in particular, like that was probably just going to be an adjustment. And like the passing stuff in its own right is like really interesting because he's a much better passer than I thought.
Oh, he's a great playmaker. Did you see some of those ones, those passes to the wing? He's had a couple really nice dump-offs to Tristan early in the season.
He's already like a league's better lob thrower than Colin Sexton, who like isn't good at throwing lobs.
Yes. Yes, 100%.
So, I don't know. I think you just got to be patient with it. I think splitting him up in different ways would be interesting. I think if he can just plan a situation where like maybe he just gets forced to like do stuff, I just wonder if like that brings something out of him that we haven't seen yet. That's just like something I would like to see, where like he just does have to be the offensive engine. Because if he's playing with Larry and Deli, like he's gonna have to do stuff.
I mean, look at what he did to I don't know who he crossed up yesterday. I can't remember, but did you see the move where he went? He knifed into the paint. He made one little pump fake move, went up and under the other side. That was one of those moves where it's like, oh, okay, you got something here. And I swear, I tweeted this last night. I said, you see at least one of those a game with Garland.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's like, all right, pump the brakes. And let's not forget, he's a smaller guy and he's going against competition he's never seen before, who are longer, who are faster, stronger. That's tough to adjust to, man, especially when you only play 4.5 games in college.
Yeah, and then here's also the schedule he's played the last couple games. You have Dallas, who has good guards and can be bigger. Boston. You have Philly in there twice, who's a terrible matchup for Garland just because they're
horrible.
Mammoth. Miami is a really bad matchup for Garland, and he did some good stuff in the game. I think every matchup they've had except for the Knicks have been like a tough matchup. And coming up, I mean, you have Miami again, you have Dallas again, you have Portland, which is going to put him through the ringer. He has Brooklyn, where he's going to get Dinwiddie and Kyrie, assuming Kyrie actually plays in Cleveland. You got Milwaukee, you have Detroit and Orlando, and those are like Detroit's like maybe the easiest thing on the schedule, but even then he's going to get screened by Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. Like, this is just going to be an ongoing learning process for him, and like we're not far away from him probably having to, like, I look at the December, like one of Colin Sexton and I would just expect one of Sexton and Garland is maybe going to be defending James Harden, which is what's probably Sexton maybe, but that's just going to be like a weird thing. Okay, let's move off from that. Next question.
Did you want me to use one of mine?
Yeah, give me
this. This is actually a good one to get into, and it was kind of said with a joke, but our buddy Emmett Golden over at ESPN Cleveland said, do the Cavs know that when a team scores in the paint, it counts? So that's a good segue into the whole rim protection issue here. And I think that easy answer, easy fix here would be John Henson coming back into the picture. But as we know, he's got a hamstring issue.
And so, at this point, it's fair to wonder, I think, how much you can rely on him being healthy, like just how much he's been injured. Like,
and that was the
He's broke down twice already this year. That's not great.
And that was the discussion that Milwaukee had with him over his entire career. And it sucks because he's a really good player. He's a really good player. He provides size. He can stretch the floor if need be. He can rim run. But Can you count on him being there? Can you count on him being a body? It doesn't look great. So, that's still kind of an incomplete grade you can give there. But while they're waiting, I think that Ante Zizic clearly isn't in game shape. He can give you a bigger body at least, but you can see that he's a step slow, kind of lumbers up and down the floor, not really giving you the best minutes at the five. So when you're forced to play small, you're going to get scored on in the paint. And when you have these mismatches, how many times do you see teams picking on Darius Garland in either pick and roll situations or just in the post? I see it a ton. Because it's so easy to just, okay, I'm taller than you. Easy, right off the bucket, right off the glass, off of cuts, Those types of situations are not easy to cope with when you don't have a team that's long enough. Call me crazy, but I even think if when Windler comes back, he might even be able to help a little bit with rim protection just because he's at least long. Like, they have nothing right now. They've got no size. They've got Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, and Ante Zizic at the moment. Those are their biggest guys. And people that see Alphonso McKinney as a four or completely off base, he's only like 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah, but like, that's, you can get away with that. Like, you can get away with a guy that size, and he's also like thicker. Like, just to be like blunt about it, he's like thicker than Jetty, who's not strong.
Meant to play the four, I'll tell you that.
No, and he had to play last night, and like KPJ, yep. Like that's abuse to throw him on the block. So like McKinney, like, sorry my guy, you're getting the David Nwaba, like, go down inside and bang with people. And McKinney's definitely not as big as Nwaba, who was like a freaking like thick jacked guy, but
Luke Cage is Larry Nance Jr. called him last year.
yeah Luke gets great. But like, you don't have that this year, so you're just kind of in this position where like McKinney kind of has to like approximate that to some degree, which isn't totally fair of him, but like, he's better suited to do it than like anyone else they have.
And then when you go back to the whole paint issue, you notice that they're getting killed from the outside, and that's just because when you're packing the paint and trying to stop people from getting those easy buckets, teams are gonna flame you from beyond the arc. And Beeline's comments on this have been very consistent. When you don't have length on your team, the efforts have to be extra. You have to play like a pain in the neck. You have to be nasty and gritty and run them off the line. And it's just not a good combination. Because even defensively before those injuries in those first 10 games, like when the article that I wrote, when they were 4-6, they were doing a decent job defensively. These last three or four in the last week and a half, it's just not been pretty. And they're just kind of getting whatever they want against the Cavs right now.
We're going to take one last break and then we're going to come back. I agree with what you said about the rim protection. I think it's an ongoing long-term concern for the Cavs, but we're going to take one more break and then we're going to be back to talk about our last question about a guy we haven't seen yet play, which should narrow it down a little bit. But today's show is also sponsored by MyBookie. Use your basketball knowledge to prove you have what it takes at MyBookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. If you're listening on the go and you can't visit MyBookie right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. We'll be right back. All right, Spencer, last question comes from GG Greens_ on Twitter. Where do you see Dylan Windler fitting into the lineup when he returns? I will just say this, and I'll cede the floor to you as we get started here. I think he's a lock to play based on what John Beeline has said about him, how much he seems to really like him. I do think the G League could make some sense for him just to start, but I think Windler's going to play.
Oh, absolutely. Beeline's already talked about just getting him back into the feel of things, so he will see time in the G League. He's already kind of confirmed that. He said maybe we'll give him some time in Canton, give him some practice time down there, whatever it takes. They don't want to re-aggravate this stress reaction. When you're a skinnier type of dude like Dylan Windler, with, long legs, long arms, you don't want to do anything to put that injury in jeopardy even more. So they've been very cautious with him. I know a lot of people are really aching to see him play. And I think it's just because of what they saw maybe in summer league, what they've heard from teammates and what they've heard from the coaching staff about how good of a fit he is within this. I think a lot of people would rather see him taking spot up threes than Osman or anybody else on the perimeter who's taking spot up threes. Not that they run enough of those, honestly, but I think that he's going to be in the bench role first just to get him out there acclimated to the teammates and whatnot. In February or March, maybe he's in the starting lineup. I think the long term for him is starting lineup. Long term meaning the rest of this season down the line. Maybe next year. I think that he's going to be a starting three for you. And I think that the ambidextrousness is really, really something that teams will be on their toes against, because he's going to be a guy that swings the ball around the perimeter the way that they've talked about doing that they haven't done. He's going to be able to put the ball on the floor because he did that really well in summer league when he had to adapt when Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. couldn't play. He had to play that role of he's the guy. He's not going to be the guy in this system, but he's going to be somebody who's going to play a complementary role. He's going to be somebody who spaces the floor. He's going to be somebody who gives you offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds. How about that? He's going to bring a huge piece that they need into this, and they can't get him back sooner because, like we've talked about at length, the Cavs don't have length. They don't have a wing that they can really depend on. They've been playing guards at the three spot, sometimes the four spot. That's just not going to cut it in a league like this. So Wendler coming back, it's not going to just be a Band-Aid. It's just going to be something that they can really lean on. And hopefully he stays healthy after that.
When he comes back, he's going to clearly eat into somebody's minutes.
Yep.
He's going to eat into just, it's inevitable. Who do you think that is going to be?
Kevin Porter Jr.
I agree. And I think the long-term answer, I think like the best case scenario is like come deadline, if you could move Clarkson, that would solve like some issues with some of the roster. I think I like JC. He's a fun guy to talk to. He's never boring, no matter kind of what he does. But I think if you're looking like at the needs past this season and you're looking at sort of what you want to learn about the roster this year, I think him not being on the team like after the trade deadline, just being flipped somewhere, I think would really kind of clear some of this up. It would allow you to play a little bit bigger. It would allow you to get Wendler and Kevin Porter Jr. on the floor. Because I don't think you can really sacrifice what Dele does if you want to keep things kind of coherent on those bench units right now. Assuming Dele is healthy, of course.
We're forgetting about Brandon Knight, too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Brandon Knight is I feel for Brandon because, like, the Cavs did their damnedest to, like, kind of hype him up a little bit in camp. And I think with him, I think he looked really bad that first game he played. He's looked a little better since. I think there's something about Dele that just coaches seem to trust more than they trust anybody else, whether that's fair or not.
Nah, maybe. It also like comes back to odd man out, you know? I mean, man out when you have 5-6 guards.
Way so many guards. But I think if you could flip Clarkson, because he is just playing and taking a lot of shots, that would kind of allow you to play both. I think the clear answer, I think you're right, is I think it is
KPJ.
KPJ coming, losing some minutes for Wendler. And I don't know what that means for him. You know, you got to probably keep, they hopefully, I think if you're they're going to do that, if that's the plan, you'd want to communicate back to him as early as possible and just kind of explain why. I wouldn't hate like a 5-game Kevin Porter Jr. can't charge stint.
No. And the G League is so well utilized nowadays, especially because almost every single team has their own. I think Portland's the only one who doesn't.
I think Denver doesn't have one.
Okay, there you go. The two teams in the Northwest. There you go. The way that they utilize it now, there are guys from the G League making an impact every single game now. And if you look at how much they bring to the table as far as their work ethic, as far as production goes. There's a lot of alumni from the G League that are making a difference.
Chris Middleton being a prime example of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, some guy who just got a max. Like, you know, you can work your way up. So they shouldn't even look at that as a demotion. That would just be, go and get a feel for the game. Go do your thing. Be you. Hell, look what Iggy Brazdeikis just did. He just dropped 36 last night for Westchester. Like, you know, it's a good place to build confidence. It's a good place to kind of just get a feel and get yourself back right in the head and, you know, really take advantage of a playing time.
Well, for you, kind of as we wrap up here, what would when you think about KPJ and you think just about the overall kind of construction of this team, is there something you would like to see? Well, maybe is there something with the rotation aside from something else, whether it's with KPJ, whether it's with someone else, when the roster is actually healthy, like, is there something you personally would like to just kind of see? Because I do think, to Beilein's credit, I do think he's stuck with kind of a pretty specific structure so far, and I do think we'll see some deviations, but is there a deviation or an adjustment you would like to see?
He has stuck to his guns, and you know what? It's been thrown out of whack the last couple games just because of some of those injuries and some of those rest periods. I see Wednesday night against Miami that the Cavs just announced that they're going to rest Tristan Thompson. You know, like those things throw off a coach's rotation and throw off the game plan. But as far as when everyone's healthy, what I would like to see with Kevin Porter Jr. specifically is what you're asking?
Or anybody. Any rotation adjustment you'd want to see.
I think that you should try and start Alphonso McKinney at the three at some point.
Are you worried about Jetty?
Am I worried about Jetty? In this capacity, playing 30 minutes a night, yes. In the capacity of playing 20 minutes a night or 20 to 25 minutes a night off the bench with different guys that maybe would defer to him and would able to kind of let him do his own thing against second unit guys, absolutely not. So being a seventh or eighth man, no, I'm not worried in that kind of capacity. But as a starter, as a starting three, I think that's not really what we're seeing here as a realistic future.
Yeah, I think he gets a little swallowed up in the context of everything else is going on, and I think that like he just seems less aggressive to me than I remember seeing it. You see sometimes for him in
he looks Europe like he's thinking too, just like Darius. He's overthinking.
Yeah, and you can see him like push his shot sometimes. Like where he just is like for like his shot form just looks like completely off. It's quite weird with Jetty. I can't quite figure that one out just yet. But Cavs Heat Wednesday, I think that's going to be a tough game. No Tristan, I think certainly makes that a really tough game. Anything you're looking for in that game, Spencer?
Well, if Kevin Love comes back, they'll be able to space the floor. I'm wondering if they would start Ante in that just because of not having a center, if they would start Kevin Love and continue to move Jetty up and maybe start Alphonso or KPJ again.
Kevin doesn't like playing the five, so I wonder if he gets it. And then, but then, you know, like, are you gonna have Larry? I'll look at the injury report and check, but
it could be Kevin Love just at the five because Myers Leonard is a very similar type of guy who kind of spreads the floor a little bit.
Well, but it's also Bam.
It is Bam, but Bam plays the four. So
Bam guarded Tristan a lot last game.
That's true. Is
the thing there. Pulling up the injury report, seeing if there's anything for the most recent one. Cavs in Miami. Kevin Love is listed as probable with that lower back contusion. Larry Nance Jr. is listed as questionable. Windler listed as out. Thompson listed as out. Henson listed as out. So maybe if you get Nance back, this becomes a little bit easier to do. I would probably just start Zizic. You know, I think I would just to kind of keep Nance in that bench role.
Start him and play him like 15 minutes.
Yeah, and just kind of stick to him to a script and kind of get him in and out when you need to. And if he gets ripped apart by somebody, then you pull him out and you just play smaller. But, you know, tough game. It's a tough week. You know, the Knicks loss was kind of – the Knicks game was supposed to be the easy one. Now you got Miami, and then you get Dallas again, and then you get Portland and Carmelo Anthony on Saturday, which I'm very excited to see Melo in person. That's an unexpected perk of this week for me.
So am I. And you know what? We moved this podcast up a little bit early so we could both watch Carmelo Anthony make his first NBA start.
Darn right, wearing double zero. Had a whole Instagram post about it. It's truly incredible.
Oh my goodness. Did you by chance see, I know we're running out of time, but did you by chance see the numbers that I put up with the pick and roll stuff on my Twitter feed?
Off me. Oh, no Dame in this game though, which is not what you want.
No, not at all. Basically the lack of execution in the pick and roll. They're running Colin Sexton in pick and roll situations as a ball handler way too much. They are as well for Darius Garland, but with Colin, the thing is he doesn't turn it over, but he doesn't make plays for others. He's the best ball handler they have in pick and roll situations is Jordan Clarkson, followed by Matthew Dellavedova. And Clarkson gets it five times a game, five possessions a game, and Deli gets it twice. So maybe don't want to run as much pick and roll with the Cavs, especially because the roll men like Thompson, Love, and Nance, Tristan Thompson's not been good as a roll man. He's been pretty much good as the man in the middle, but not so much as a roll man in the pick and roll situation. He does create quite a few points off the pick and roll, but that being said, I think that the Cavs are not in transition nearly enough. I think they're scoring over a point per possession in transition, and they have the second least amount of possessions in transition. So they're not running enough. And for being as small as they are and for being as, you know, developing of a group as they are, the game's easier when you're running. I know it's tough when you don't get stops, but get up and down the floor. Those are the easiest buckets you're going to get. Outrun the competition, draw those fouls. That's the best. I think that's the best formula you could possibly do, especially when you're missing bodies.
Yeah, I agree with that. Find Spencer on Twitter at Spin Davies. He writes at places like the Basketball Insiders, does some work at Close Up 360 as well. We'll have him on the pod throughout the season. But Spencer, thank you so much.